WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. A COVID-19 outbreak at the ICE Detention Center in Farmville seems to have spiraled out of control. Meanwhile, local school systems start to back off from earlier plans for some kind of in-person instruction. And in Harrisonburg, most students will be distance learning this fall. And when lawmakers return to Richmond in August, proposed criminal justice reform will not just be aimed at the police. This is the WMRA Daily for Wednesday, July 22nd. Early this month, more than 70% of detainees at the ICE facility in Farmville had tested positive for COVID-19. Ellen Rodriguez-Espinoza with VPM News in Richmond spoke with Jenny Gathright. She's a reporter with WAMU in Washington, D.C., about her investigation into the outbreak.
It's a dramatic spike in positive cases since none had been confirmed as recently as the end of May. Thank you for joining us, Jenny.
Thank you, Alan. Hi.
So you've spoken to some of the individuals detained at this facility. How do they describe the conditions that they're living under to you?
People are scared. People who are detained in Farmville describe an environment where people everywhere around them are sick and where they, in some cases themselves, are exhibiting symptoms of the virus and now have tested positive for the virus. On Friday, I spoke with a man who told me that he knows of only about two people in his 70-person dorm whose coronavirus tests came back negative. It's clear that many, many people in Farmville are sick and are sick with the coronavirus and are coughing and having trouble breathing, all the symptoms we associate with the virus.
You also spoke with family members of detainees. This is Norma, who has asked for us to not use her last name, talking about her husband.
It is a human being, and not just my husband, but every single one of the people is there. They're human beings, and they deserve our respect.
Jenny, what are some concerns that Norma and others have expressed about their loved ones?
They just want to make sure they're hearing from their family members regularly, and they want to see them come home. I mean, Norma said that money is really tight in her household right now, but she says that she would find a way to get the money to quarantine her husband in a hotel room if he could just be released. And I think that's something you hear repeatedly from people, is that they're just worried that their family members are sick and are not getting the care that they need.
Now, as we see this spike in coronavirus cases at this facility, you reported that there were other detainees being brought in from other states, correct?
Yeah, so people detained at Farmville and their lawyers are linking this recent outbreak of cases to transfers of detainees to Farmville from detention centers in Florida and Arizona at the beginning of June. Ultimately, 51 of those 74 people ended up testing positive for the coronavirus. And then if you fast forward to the end of June, that's when lawyers for people who had been detained at Farmville before those transfers started reporting that their clients were sick and that many people in the facility were sick. And then ultimately, ICE did universal testing and, you know, it surfaced an alarming positivity rate that more than 70% of people in the facility are confirmed to be positive for COVID-19 at that point.
And in light of all these positive cases, how is ICE responding to this?
ICE says it does separate detainees who test positive from those who do not, and that it is providing medical screenings in the facility, temperature checks, and it says it's added hand washing stations, hand sanitizer, it's distributing masks, including N95 masks, to people inside the facility. But I think one thing that's clear, at least from the immigration lawyers I've spoken with, is that any effort that ICE made to keep people separated did not seem to work in keeping the virus from spreading to the rest of the facility.
And these lawyers you've spoken to and other immigrant advocacy groups, what are they demanding from ICE in response to this?
They want to see people released from the facility, particularly those who are the most medically vulnerable to the virus because of underlying conditions they have. They also want to see better medical care for their clients. But I think the number one demand is for as many people to be released from the facility as possible.
Okay. Well, Jenny, thank you so much for sharing your reporting with us.
Thank you, Alan.
Jenny Gathright is a reporter with WAMU in Washington, D.C. She was speaking with Ellen Rodriguez-Espinoza of VPM in Richmond. And we've posted a link to more on this story at WMRA.org. As the coronavirus continues to spread, local school boards are taking a range of approaches to instruction in the fall. Most students in Harrisonburg City Schools will likely go back to school in the fall with distance learning only. The Daily News Record reports that during a work session on Tuesday, the school board moved toward a distance learning plan for students in all grades, except those students with disabilities and most of the English language learners. The new plans are a step back from an earlier hybrid learning model with a combination of in-person and virtual learning. In Charlottesville and Albemarle, school boards are considering a later opening of September 8th. Charlottesville school officials are still considering both in-person and hybrid options and are still soliciting feedback from parents. Other systems, such as Augusta County, plan to resume in-person learning, but with protective measures that include required face coverings, physical distancing in classrooms, and more frequent cleaning of rooms. Stanton City Schools, restarting August 18th, plan to offer a choice to students of either virtual learning or a hybrid of in-person and online instruction each week. Statewide, the average number of new daily cases is now near 1,000 after dropping to near 500 per day on average in June, according to the Virginia Department of Health. In the Central Shenandoah Health District, Harrisonburg and Rockingham County have seen the highest concentrations of COVID-19. In Harrisonburg, 29 people have died from the disease, and the city has reached more than 1,000 total cases since the beginning of the pandemic. In the Thomas Jefferson District, which includes Charlottesville, VDH reports a total of 30 deaths from the disease, eight of those in Charlottesville. Statewide, there have been 2,048 confirmed or suspected deaths from COVID-19. That is nearly equivalent to the entire population of Stephen City. Finally today, lawmakers will consider criminal justice reform during the special General Assembly session next month, and not all the directives will be aimed at police. Important changes may also be on the horizon for the courts. Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports.
This last election cycle, several progressive prosecutors won office by making a series of campaign promises, ending the cash bail system, stopping marijuana prosecutions, and eliminating the death penalty. But when they took office, sometimes judges stood in the way of change. Here's Fairfax County Commonwealth's Attorney Steve Descano.
We've seen it when Commonwealth's attorneys try to handle misdemeanor marijuana cases in the past. We've seen it when we have prosecutors who want to take a more rehabilitative approach. And we've seen it every time that we've tried to take a step to really get at the root of systemic problems.
Now, Descano and several of his colleagues have formed the Progressive Prosecutors for Justice, and they're pressing lawmakers to clarify exactly what kind of discretion prosecutors have. In Rico County, Commonwealth's attorney Shannon Taylor says lawmakers can clear up confusion when prosecutors want to drop charges, but judges push back.
So now that's a question of, okay, well, now is the judiciary, are they perhaps stepping outside their role? Are they now trying to dictate how executive function is going to be implemented?
The Progressive Prosecutors for Justice will be pressing for several other criminal justice reform efforts during the special session, including allowing prosecutors to have access to disciplinary records of police officers, requiring all warrants to be served during the daytime, and eliminating mandatory minimum sentences. I'm Michael Pope.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicki. Thanks for listening. Stay safely connected, and I hope you enjoy your Wednesday.